Radio Prague News. The Czech President and Prime Minister are engaged in a public row over foreign policy. President Klaus has outlined his own vision of a future Europe. And Czech Harry Potter fans are crowding bookstores around the country for the sixth volume of the Boy Wizard series. The Czech President Václav Klaus and Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek are engaged in a heated dispute over the Prime Minister's proposal to compensate anti-fascist Sudeten Germans expelled from the country at the end of the Second World War, despite the fact that they had actively opposed the Nazi regime. The President has slammed the Prime Minister for planning to reopen sensitive World War II issues. In an interview for today's Mladá fronta Dnes daily, Mr. Klaus said the Prime Minister was behaving irresponsibly and putting his own interests above those of the Czech Republic. Prime Minister Paroubek countered that President Klaus was not an absolute monarch to be able to scold the Prime Minister and order him around. Mr. Paroubek has nevertheless said he would like to meet with Mr. Klaus so that they could try to resolve their differences. President Klaus has outlined his own vision of a future Europe. In Saturday's edition of the Daily Lidové Noviny, Mr. Klaus says that following the rejection of the European Constitution by French and Dutch voters, it was time to abandon the federalist concept and plan Europe's future along different lines. The President would like the European Union to be transformed into an organization of European states, which would benefit by free trade and movement of capital and labor, but not be restricted in their sovereignty. The organization's members would be individual states, not citizens, and these states could act together in their common interests, but there should be no unnecessary unification or centralization and no compulsory common ideology, Mr. Klaus says. Czech Harry Potter fans have been crowding bookstores around the country for the sixth volume of the Boy Wizard series. A number of Prague bookstores, which started selling the book at midnight, organized fun and games for kids who came in wearing Harry Potter masks and costumes, and a competition for two tickets to London. Interest in the last of the Potter series, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, is expected to grow when the Czech translation comes out. To date, over 1 million Harry Potter books have sold in the country. The police have broken up a techno party near the town of Veselý Úder. The party started on Friday afternoon on a field in close proximity to the town, and the police allegedly got dozens of complaints in the course of the night. The event, attended by an estimated 300 young people, was broken up on midday Saturday. During an informal meeting with Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek, the former Social Democrat leader and ex-Prime Minister Miloš Zeman said he would like to find a way to support the party in next year's general elections. He said he was not interested in returning to high politics or holding any kind of post, but wanted to be useful as a rank-and-file member. Mr. Zeman, who now lives the life of a pensioner in the Moravian Highlands, expressed admiration for the way in which Prime Minister Paroubek had tackled the problems at hand since taking office. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Sunday is expected to be sunny to partly cloudy with some scattered showers and day temperatures between 23 and 27 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in the next half hour or so, Mailbox, Pavla Horáková's weekly session over your letters. That's followed by A Letter from Prague, in which Martin Mikule will find something nice to say about the rainy summer that's been driving everyone else mad here in Central Europe. And finally, you can sit back and enjoy a fresh edition of Czech Books with Bernie Higgins, this week featuring award-winning Australian writer Isabel Carmody. All that coming up, and we start with your mail.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's weekly mailbox program. I'm back again, and many thanks to Dita Asiedu for standing in for me last Sunday when I was away. At the end of last week's program, Dita mentioned a letter sent to us by Mr. D.M. Cook from Scotland, who was interested to know the current name of a Prague street which was renamed Viktoriastrasse or Victoria Street by the Nazis during World War II. Mr. Cook even sent us a photo of the street. We immediately received two replies from the United Kingdom. The first one from Stephen Conlin from Bristol.
In answer to your question on mailbox, the street that was renamed Viktoriastrasse is today's Národní třída, on which stands the National Theatre. Of course, many other streets were renamed during the Protectorate, especially if they originally celebrated those who had contributed to the Czech national revival. For example, Balbinova, the street that runs next to the Czech radio building, was renamed Zojmestrasse during the Second World War.
And the second reply came from Philip Hines from the UK.
Národní was renamed Viktoriastrasse during the Nazi occupation. According to a contemporary map in Callum MacDonald and Jan Kaplan's 1995 book, Prague in the Shadow of the Swastika.
And Mr. Hines adds,
it was interesting to hear that the Czech RAF 311 squadron features in a book about RAF attacks on U-boats. My father-in-law, Andrei Spacek, fought in 311 and survived the war, living in the UK until his death in 1987. I believe that one of his logbooks, still in my wife's possession, records at least one attack on a German submarine.
And we were not sure how to pronounce Mr. Spacek's or Spacek's name, so we hope we didn't terribly mispronounce it. Thank you very much for those quick replies. The mystery is now solved. Prague's Národní Street was called Národní before the German occupation, but before 1918 it was called Ferdinandova, after the Habsburg Emperor Ferdinand V. It is not unusual for Prague streets to have changed names several times in recent history. For example, the very street on which the Czech radio building is located, Vinohradská Street, was called Fošova during the two decades of the First Czechoslovak Republic, after French Marshal Ferdinand Foch, the supreme commander of the Allied forces in World War I. Then, during the Nazi occupation, it was renamed Schwerinova after a Prussian marshal, only to be renamed Stalinova after the communist takeover. Hopefully it will now keep the name Vinohradská after the Prague district of Vinohrady, or Vineyards. Now back to Radio Prague's new signature tunes. In last week's mailbox we heard a couple of your responses to them, and here's another one from Jonathan Murphy from Ireland.
I always liked the old jingle, and I agree with your listener who said it was very effective. I wasn't tired of it at all. It would seem to me that the Czech composer who wrote it could sell the rights onto another news organization quite easily. I think it might be a while before I get used to the new jingle. But I can tell you this now, it's certainly better than a lot of the other ones out there.
Thanks for that response, Jonathan. And speaking of music, here's a song by the Czech pop legend Karel Gott.
Sotva dostal starokrav, tak jak to žádal dobrý mrav. On u každé se zastavil a slušně se jí představil. A já jsem Budy a dnešním dnem výnosem ustanovil jsem tady pastevce.
Karel Gott there. During the week we reported on a letter signed by 69 Czech MPs and asking President Václav Klaus to give the pop singer Karel Gott an important state honour, the Order of Merit. Karel Gott, who has just turned 66, has sold many millions of albums during a career spanning three decades and is a living legend in this country, but also in Slovakia, Russia and Germany. But he also has his critics, especially among those who think he had a charmed life during communist times. In response to Radio Prague's report, Vladimir Val Symbol from the United States sent us this email.
He has been an ambassador for both Czechs and Slovaks, not only in Europe, but also in the USA. Every one of his appearances here were sold out. He even appeared on a nationally broadcast country and Western television show. He is loved by many people around the world, even those that fled from communism.
Thank you very much, Mr. Symbol. And I think this email is a very nice birthday present for Karel Gott. And all we have time for today is our regular competition question. On June the 10th, 1923, a boy called Jan was born in Czechoslovakia's easternmost province of Ruthenia, now part of Ukraine. The family was extremely poor, and in his adult age, our man claimed he had got his first pair of shoes at the age of 7. Both his parents died in a Nazi concentration camp, but young Jan managed to escape to Britain, where he joined the armed forces and changed his name. He started a career in publishing, and he was a Labour MP between 1964 and 1970, but he was most famous for having built a publishing empire that spanned the world. In November 1991, he died under mysterious circumstances. Who was he? Please send us the answer by the end of July to the usual address, Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or english@radio.cz.
Pavla will be back same time next week, so please keep those letters coming. But now, how about a letter from Prague by Martin Mikule?
Prague's weather in recent few weeks has probably disappointed many tourists who have come to enjoy the city in the summer sunshine. Since late June, Prague has been mostly cloudy and full of rain. Not only foreign tourists, but Czechs as well are complaining about the weather. People hate bad weather, especially if it comes just on weekends. Those who have just taken a couple of weeks off work and now they must spend their holiday in rain are completely furious. Actually, Praguers do not have so many reasons to complain about bad weather. Even though Prague is not as sunny as Rome, Athens or Istanbul, rain is still much rarer here than in London, Brussels or in Hamburg. I know I'm an exception, but I have to admit I like Prague in rain. Prague has a special charm during showers. The lawns and parks turn green, the rain is able to make special silent music hitting the cobblestone pavements, creating a veil over the ugly noise of the city traffic. In such weather, I enjoy sitting in a cafe with big windows, sipping a cup of tea and watching the funny cows out in the streets. My dream is to possess a little garden with an alcove or at least a sheltered terrace, not to hide there on a sunny day, but to be able to enjoy the beauty of rain while sitting in a comfortable dry place. Perhaps I am not the only one who feels inspired by rain. A great Czech poet, Vítězslav Nezval, wrote in the 1930s a beautiful melancholic poem called Prague with Fingers of Rain. But I know most people do not share my liking for this kind of weather at all. In the summer months, most Czechs tend to leave for the sunny south of Europe to avoid as much as possible the chance of having their holidays spoiled by rain. Others sit in front of their TVs, hoping the forecaster announces warm temperatures and sunshine for the coming weekend. People on canoe trips, one of the most popular sports at this time of the year, hate rainy days when everything gets wet while you are sleeping in a tent. On the other hand, a drought means little water in the rivers, which is also not good for this kind of sport. I admit, also my passion for rain is limited. The situations when I'm heading dressed up to an important meeting or event and appear in the middle of street with no umbrella are also not my favorite ones. And there are even worse situations. I think it would be utterly cynical to rejoice at rain at a time when many places around the country are hit by heavy floods. As I write these lines and I look out the window, I see the sky is cloudy again and we may expect some rain. I'm tempted to take my umbrella and set off for a walk. I have to take advantage of the chance, as next week the meteorologists forecast sunny weather again and the sun lovers will have their turn.
Martin Mikule with Letter from Prague. I find there are two things that listeners particularly appreciate on a weekend, books and music. So I'm happy to say that it's now time for Czech Books with Bernie Higgins.
Hello and welcome to Czech Books, and this week I'm delighted to have with me Isabel Carmody, who's an Australian writer of fantasy science fiction for younger people and adults. Welcome, Isabel.
Thanks, Bernie.
And you have written over 20 books, and you've had a very long career. When did it begin, and how did it begin?
Well, I started writing my first book when I was 14, and only looking back, I guess it coincides with the fact that my father died. I was the eldest of 8 children, and my mother used to work at night, and she left me alone to look after my 7 younger brothers and sisters. And I didn't have a television to entertain them with, the world's best babysitter, and my parents didn't buy books or magazines, so the only thing I could think of doing to control them was to tell them stories. So right from the very beginning, there was this really strong sense of an audience and having to control them, almost as if my life depended on it. And I think you can still see, even 20 books later, those early oral storytelling aspects of how I began. And that first book that I started when I was 14 was my first book published. So I worked on that for a lot of years, again and again, not really to get published, but because I just loved the story that I was writing. And it was about a main character who was a misfit. Very coincidentally, I was a misfit. So I was really pouring myself into that.
Was this very early success? Was it clearly it had its very positive sides, but were there some negative aspects to being successful so young?
Well, I wasn't really that young. I started at 14 writing it, and I rewrote for something like 6 or 7 years. I think one of the reasons so many people write and have their first book turned down is because 1 minute after they finish the first draft, they're contemplating which publisher they're going to send it to. And for me, that really wasn't in my mind. I came from a very working class background, and there was no idea in my head that someone like me could ever be published. I was just writing a story I loved over and over, and of course anything you do over and over you get better at, and I did. I wasn't particularly gifted, and then I became a journalist. I went to university, I became a journalist because that was the other thing that I knew really well, how to write. And I was writing at home, and it seemed to me that when I was going and doing these stories as a journalist, there was a greater truth in what I was doing at night, home, writing about other worlds and other people, and that split was really very strong in me, that sense of writing truth or some kind of higher truth at night, when it was fiction.
I felt this when I read your book, The Gathering, which I think won an award. It's maybe your most best-selling of your books. And even though it has this aspect of even horror, never mind fantasy, it really seemed to me about a teenage boy coming to terms with past traumas and conflicts and dealing with reality, even though his struggle in the book was with an evil headmaster in this evil school.
Yeah, for me, that book was a real watershed because I was for the first time coming into the real world to write. It was the first book that I had written which was probably much more accessible than the 3 books that I had written before. It was set in the real world, a world I knew. It was set in a housing commission, low socioeconomic area, the kind that I'd grown up in. I was broke when I was writing it. I was living in a renovated bus in the back of a housing commission house, and I felt like I was camped out in enemy territory. At night, I could hear in these two peopled houses, people screaming at one another and cars revving up and terrible music. And there was an oil refinery quite clear. And where I used to sit and write, it always seems to me strangely significant that rosy glow from the fire that came from the stack at the top of the oil refinery used to be reflected on the pages. And the death smell in the book was literally the smell of an abattoir as I used to walk at night with my little dog. So it was very much part of the real world.
I imagine that your books speak very directly to young people and teenagers. I know you have quite a wide fan base. What is your communication with them like?
Well, what surprises me, or what I feel most when I'm asked about the kind of people that read me, and I can only tell from those passionate people who write or who run those incredibly well-informed websites about me, is that they're the kind of people that I am, if you know what I mean. I mean, I care about certain things and I'm very passionate about certain things. I don't see myself as writing to convert anybody to anything, but because I'm passionate, that passion seeps into what I write. And what I find is that the audience, no matter what age they are, is responding very much with their own concerns, so they're aligning very strongly. I remember reading a PhD about something about myself once, in which someone was very critical of me because they claimed that in my writing, you would be fine as long as you aligned with my point of view and my value systems, but if you didn't, you would find the book didn't work for you at all, or the books. And I think that was actually very true. I would have to say I obviously think that good people align with me.
I'm sure you have only very good readers. I'd like now to turn to Prague, because you've lived here on and off. You divide your time between Australia and Prague for around 12 years, and I think this has been a new inspiration for your writing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Growing up as I did with this poor background, I never imagined travelling. And in fact, I gave it up mentally, as you can do at 21. I gave up everything, the idea of marriage, the idea of children, the idea of having any money in the bank ever, and travel. That was never going to happen because I was committed to writing and I didn't want to do anything that would get in the way. But as life transpires, I did travel and I did come to Prague. And I came to Prague basically because I fell in love with a Czech man. And then I ended up living here because, part of the time, because neither of us wanted to lose our country. And he's a writer too, so we were here every second year and in Australia every first year. And so the writing that I do here, it seems to me to be absolutely different than the writing that I was doing before, in that living in Australia, you're completely separate from the rest of the world. And many people feel like nothing's happening in the world that matters to us down there. And I feel like the thing that happens when you live overseas is that you lose your innocence in a way, and you gain some deeper experience of the world, and you lose that stupid sense of borders, which I think is just so much the cause of so much conflict in the world. You lose a sense of, this is my place, I have to protect it, I'm defined by it. And you move into the world and you lose some skins. And I think that's really what I see most in my writing, particularly the short stories that I write here and some of the books. They're much, much, to me, much deeper than the things that I'd done before.
I'd like now to focus on a book of yours which is about to be published, I think, by Penguin. Yep. And this, I know, has a real Prague inspiration, and it's called Little Fir. And I'd love you to explain its origins, its birth.
Oh, I think nothing really is so close to my heart as Little Fir. I mean, you always feel a bit this way about books anyway. It's you're in love with the one that you've just written. But this really is special to me. Like my very first book, I didn't come up with it for publication. It's a story that evolved out of me telling a story as I walked around Prague to my little girl. She was three then, and in one of our Prague years, and she was full of questions, as they always are. And they're very profound, those questions that children ask. And they come up with strange solutions. They're really enchanting. And they have strange ways of using the language, which, for me, the sound of language is really important. It goes back to that oral storytelling. And I'll always choose something that's poetic over something that's grammatically correct. This is where editors and I often come to grief. And Little Fir really rose out of Prague. Even though Prague is not mentioned in the story, it's certainly the city in the story, meaning a city which is very, very, very old. For me, that old that it's almost fantastical in any case. And I can even remember the very beginning of the book. We were looking at one of those basement holes that looked down into the underneath of a building, and my little girl said, "What's down there, Mama?" And I said, "I don't know why. Trolls live down there." And she said, "Are they bad?" And I said, of course they're bad. And she said, "It's dark down there." And I said, "They like the dark." And it evolved like this. And that was the first day, and it was like a spark. And we told that story, and she was certainly part of the making of it, proposing solutions. And I love this to and fro storytelling. And since she came along, one of the things that's come to really enchant me is how you build stories with children. And I love that building of stories between you. And there's certainly that sense. So that the book, now that it's written, I see as being as much a book that an adult would enjoy reading to a child and talking about with a child as that a child would like to hear.
Could I ask you to read a little from Little Fir?
This piece that I'll read concerns one of the characters in the book, which my daughter and I really love. And perhaps my favourite character as much as hers is a character called Crow. And Crow is very conceited, very rude, particularly about humans. And I should explain, Little Fir, the main character, is an elf troll. And she has these notions about humans based on no knowledge whatsoever, except the stories she hears from animals who generally come to her because they're wounded and need repairing. And so her sole knowledge of humans is what she's come to imagine. And, of course, it very much parallels the way children build a picture of the world with gaps in it that they fill with their imagination. And so this is Crow and Little Fir, and he flies up to her. Crow was Little Fir's other great friend. She had found him at the foot of a tree after a storm and nursed him until he stopped seeing three of everything. Crow was loud, boastful, conceited, opinionated. Yet like Brownie, his mind was occupied, if somewhat giddily, with more than food and mates. He too dwelt among humans, but he regarded the city as a roost for birds and saw humans as stupid, dangerously clumsy creatures that were of no consequence except for their production of crust and seeds. But because of Little Fur's interest in them, he had taken to making announcements about their activities to her. And so it was Crow who brought the first news of the tree burners. "A pack of humans burning trees," Little Fur echoed, refusing to react too much. Crow liked to present news in the most dramatic way, in order to make sure everyone was listening to him. "They're creeping out at night and burning trees up," Crow screamed. Beginning to be alarmed, Little Fur questioned the bird closely and learnt that he had got his information from a possum who lived in the attic of an old human. She had heard the news from the human's talking picture box, which was very loud. Never exactly sure what a picture box was, Little Fur had learned enough to know that this was one of the ways by which humans communicated news.
The book is also illustrated by you. I think this is the first time that you've actually entirely illustrated a book, is that right?
Yeah, it's not a picture book. I've written picture books that were illustrated by other people. It's full of black and white illustrations, a lot more than I anticipated when I wildly proposed the idea. And the reason for illustrating it wasn't that I was in love with my own abilities or imagined that I could really even do it. It was that my little girl and I had drawn this character of Little Fur over and over and over, and we really wanted her to be the way she was, and I wanted to capture her freezer in time the way she was. And so I felt that I needed to establish how she looked myself. So I sent this project idea off to the publishers. For the first time ever, I didn't send any text. I always write books and then send them. I don't send synopsis or anything like that. But this time I sent a couple of little pictures I had drawn with Adelaide's $3 paint box. It's my little girl. And I was amazed at the response. But I mean, it could be that they saw it as being something of a gimmick.
When is this story about the Prague cellar dwellers due out? Is it imminent?
It's due to be launched on the 31st of July, and I go to Australia for that, so I'm terribly excited about it.
Thank you very much, Isabel. I'd like to actually end our discussion by asking Adelaide, your daughter, who's been with us, what she likes most about Little Fur.
Crow.
And why do you like Crow most of all?
Boastful and conceited.
And you like boastful and conceited people?
Maybe.
Okay, thank you very much, Adelaide.
Goodbye.
And thank you, Isabel.
Thanks, Bernie.
And if you'd like to comment on this or any other of our programmes, do get in touch with us at english@radio.cz or by post Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. Boom, but the little button don't but the bear. Well,